Right now on the Daily Debrief, testing moves forward on a new piece of evidence. Prosecutors hope links a Colorado man to the murder of his fiancée. And criminal charges may soon be on the way against the president of the Toronto Raptors. Plus, new accusations against actor Cuba Gooding Jr. Then, a triple murder at a Florida party. Did the prosecution fail to turn over evidence? The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Monday, June 17th.
Welcome to the Debrief, everybody. Aaron Keller along with the Michael Bryant. Good to see you again. A development in the case of Kelsey Barrett, the missing Colorado woman feared dead by authorities who are prosecuting her fiancé. A new piece of evidence may
Kelsey
help
Barrett
seal the
disappeared
case.
Disappeared last Thanksgiving and her Kelsey Barrett disappeared last Thanksgiving, and her cell phone helped lead authorities to a woman in Idaho, Crystal Jean Lee Kenny, and back to Patrick Frazee, the fiancé suspected from nearly the beginning of playing a role in Barrett's disappearance and presumed death. Authorities found a tooth fragment while searching Frazee's ranch. A judge is allowing the Colorado Bureau of Investigation to test the tooth in the presence of Frazee's attorneys. Kenny says Frazee told her he was going to kill Barrett and dump her remains in a landfill or in a river. She also says he asked her to help clean up blood and claims to have been present when Frazee burned Barrett's body.
Attorney and Law and Crime Network host Michael Bryan is here a little early tonight to help break this case down. So, Michael, you know, if you want to take a bite out of crime, sometimes you need a tooth. And in this case, if that tooth has the DNA of the victim, that seems to me like this might be that one big piece of evidence to back up potentially the story of Crystal Lee Kenny.
It's huge. And the story itself is outrageous that she would have been so involved that he would have admitted so many things to her. But you're right. If that tooth is the proper tooth and ties all of this together, we may never see a trial.
Wow, that's a strong prediction.
I mean, that's endgame stuff.
You think that's the end of it. Okay, well, I'm looking at this saying, okay, what's the defense going to be here? The defense is going to be, it is outrageous, and it's all the other woman. It's not Patrick Frazee.
They'd have to prove some sort of motive for her to make up this crazy set of stories.
Get the fiance out of the way so she can move in. I mean, I could see that being a potential defense in this case.
It could happen. It just doesn't seem all that believable. But we'll have to see. That comes down to the witnesses.
You know, usually when you have confessions, when you have stories, you need to have some corroboration for the courts to take them seriously. So what corroboration do they have here? You know, they've got little specks of blood here and there in the house. The tooth, to me, might be the key piece of this that they really need in order to say, okay, you know, there's some validity that this Crystal Lee Kenny story is true, that Frazee, you know, somehow chopped the body up or something and disposed
of
it.
There's no reason that tooth's going to be there. I mean, there's just no reason for that tooth to be there other than some nefarious reason. You know, is he the tooth fairy? Why would it be there? It was lost in the process of getting rid of this body.
We're going to keep on top of that story. Michael, we'll see you in a bit here. Police are pushing for a battery charge against the president of the Toronto Raptors. Masai Ujiri is said to have pushed and hit a sheriff's deputy as he tried to get on the court following last week's NBA title win. Police tell the local newspaper that the deputy was trying to keep Ujiri off the court because he did not have a credential, but witnesses say that's not the way it happened, and videos appear to show the president of the Raptors with a credential in his hand. The team says it is cooperating and wishes for a peaceful resolution to that situation. Another accusation to report against Cuba Gooding Jr., the actor. Gooding pleaded not guilty last week, and was released from jail without posting bail on charges that he groped a woman at a New York bar. Now, Claudia Oshry, the host of The Morning Toast, claims Gooding Jr. assaulted her back when she was 16. She claims it happened at a New York club and that she was afraid to report it due to her age. It's been about 4 weeks since a missing Connecticut mother disappeared, and there's still no sign of her. Estranged husband Fotis Doulos and his girlfriend are under arrest for tampering with evidence in the disappearance of Jennifer Doulos. Police this far have found blood spatter in a garage, blood-stained garbage bags, DNA in a kitchen sink, and have learned an employee was driving Fotis Doulos's black Ford Raptor the day Jennifer disappeared. Co-defendant Michelle Traconis was visiting friends the morning Jennifer Doulos disappeared. A baby Chicago police say was ripped from the womb of her 19-year-old mother has died. The family reported the baby's cause of death as a severe brain injury 1 month after mother Marlon Ochoa Lopez was tricked into a scheme that ultimately led to her baby being taken. Prosecutors say 46-year-old Clarissa Figueroa plotted for months, along with the others on your screen, to get a newborn child after her own adult son died. They say she set up a trap against a mother who died back in May. Florida prosecutors are seeking a death sentence against two defendants accused of showing up to a party with guns and masks and murdering three people. Christopher Vasada is on trial right now. He's accused of murdering 20-year-old Kelly Doherty, 26-year-old Sean Henry, and 24-year-old Brandy Al-Salhi. Police found Vasada collapsed on the road about a mile away from the shooting scene near his own car. They say he was carrying a glove, a magazine, and a bullet. A surviving victim testified that the party was infused with drugs and guns and that it was rare for the defendant to park his car 1 mile away from a scene like that.
Did you have any loud music going?
No.
Were you having a party back there?
No.
Were you expecting a bunch of people to come over?
No, it was a private gathering.
Just the four of y'all, correct?
Yes.
Tell us then, after a few minutes, what happened?
When the shooting started, I fell backwards out of my chair. I saw three figures rapidly approaching from this direction, firing guns at the same time. And I fell backwards out of my chair from right here and turned and ran through this alley on the side of my house. And I continued hearing shots, and I jumped through, there's a wall of bushes right here separating my neighbor's front porch from my yard. I jumped through the bushes, I landed on my neighbor's porch, and I got up and yanked his door open and told him to call 911 that someone is shooting people in my yard.
Do you know how many people were there?
I believe I saw three figures.
What were they wearing, if you saw?
From what I saw, they were all wearing very dark clothes and their faces were covered.
All right. So are you able to identify any of the shooters by face?
No.
Have you ever been able to identify any of the shooters by face?
No.
Prosecutors asked this witness to be honest about what was happening at that party.
It was illegal for you to have firearms, wasn't it?
Yes.
You'd been convicted of a felony. Plus the two federal ones now, four times, right? Four-time
yes.
Convicted felon? All right. But that night, you knew you weren't supposed to have the firearms. Obviously, you weren't supposed to have the drugs, right?
Yes.
But did you yourself go to the police and tell them what happened in that house and tell them to go in there?
Yes.
And why is that?
I was worried about my friends' well-being. I didn't know if they were dying or dead yet. I thought that some of them could be saved.
As you were out there sitting on the ground, waiting for the rest of the police officers to come, did you begin to think about the trouble you were going to get into?
Yes. After talking to the officer and him not letting me go anywhere and him not going back there to help, I sat and replayed what had happened in my head, and I realized that I was going to go to prison.
And why is that?
I knew that I had a lot of guns and a lot of drugs in my house.
Okay. Knowing that you were going to go to prison, did you cooperate with the police anyway?
Yes.
An officer who responded to the scene overnight testified about finding the bodies and the alleged murder weapon.
And those individuals that you saw deceased out back, did you later learn that it was Sean, Kelly, and Brandy?
Yes.
You said you saw some shell casings out there?
Yes.
Okay. Did you see any blood-like substance on the concrete in the backyard, if you recall?
I did see blood. I just don't know if it was later in the day or at that moment.
Okay. You stated that you saw a pistol outside?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall where it was that you saw that pistol?
It would have been towards the west side of the fire pit. So the easiest way to describe it is I walked into the backyard. The entrance of the backyard was on the west side of the house. So it was kind of like one of the first things I came across, kind of the closest thing to me.
Now, when you saw that Glock pistol.
Glock,
okay.
Yes.
When you saw that pistol, did you go over to it and make any observations?
Yes.
And what observations were you able to make?
I noticed it had an extended magazine in it. It also had what's known, it's a slang term known as a stovepipe, which is a jam in the gun where a spent shell casing gets caught in the gun. It didn't actually fully eject.
A firearms expert who took the stand today began to testify about swabs taken from guns and cartridges in this case. The defense claims that certain swabs discussed by that witness were not on a list turned over to the defense. The defense said it would hate to have a mistrial over the issue, but that it did, of course, want access to the evidence. The prosecution said information should be on its way tomorrow, but said there's not a huge issue here. Here are both sides of the argument and the judge's ruling.
I have never seen it, okay? And I asked them to retrieve the package. They came over. They said, we don't know where it is. We had this discussion at the bench.
I think what Ms. Ramsey is saying is, because we don't have the actual swabs here, that is a problem. And it's not a problem. There's no requirement that I admit the actual DNA swabs from anything.
You know, I got the best lawyers in town on this case, and these things happen. But I don't think there's a discovery violation. Furthermore, I think Ms. Ramsey, and I know you're protecting your clients, right? I'm not so sure what more you're going to do with the packet if it's here as opposed to not physically being present at this juncture. But an abundance of caution, I think your request is at this juncture is to pause the cross-examination. You hadn't even started yet, right? And then have her come back and see where we stand tomorrow.
So that was the witness's testimony, and it will continue tomorrow. And after the break here on The Debrief, more from the case against Christopher Vezzata and the DNA evidence prosecutors hope will make the link they need to connect the defendant to the crime. The Debrief's analysis is after this. Testimony resumes tomorrow in the penalty phase of a California trial involving the murders of a family of four. A jury convicted Chase Merritt of killing business associate Joseph McStay and McStay's entire family. The trial started in January and has dragged on for more than 5 months. And now back to the Christopher Vezzata trial in Florida, where prosecutors laid out their case in chief during this opening statement.
Christopher Vezzata says he was at a friend's house and he got shot. But the evidence will show you that Christopher Vezzata was at the house, but he was not at the house as a guest of Charlie Warbig. You see, Christopher Vezzata came there with Marcus Stewart. And in the course of firing multiple rounds into Kelly Doherty, Sean Henry, Brandy El-Sahid, he too was accidentally shot. And you see, although they may have walked to Mohawk or ran or a light jog, after he was shot, he couldn't run. You will hear that Sean Henry's car that was once in the driveway of Charlie's house was no longer there. And in fact, that vehicle that almost hit the deputies was being driven by Marcus Stewart. You're gonna hear that vehicle was followed back to a black car that we saw in the surveillance video, the car belonging to Christopher Vezzata.
The prosecution continued by explaining what the police found when they searched the defendant's car. The car was near where they found the defendant laying in the street a mile from the shooting scene.
And although that car was photographed on that night, law enforcement didn't initially know that that car was relevant, but when they found out, a search warrant was executed on that car. Christopher Vezzata's cell phone was found in that car. Multiple bullets were found in that car. A rifle bag was found in that car.
But when Christopher Posada was found laying in the street, he had bullets and a magazine in his pocket. You're gonna hear over the course of the investigation, there was a third scene. I-95, Palm Beach Gardens. It's learned that there's a vehicle, who we later learned belonged to Sean Henry, was found on the shoulder of the road. That was the vehicle that was taken because Christopher Posada couldn't run from the scene, he was shot. Law enforcement responded to the shoulder of the road. Inside of that vehicle, there's a pillow in the backseat that is stained with blood.
A pathologist who examined the victim's bodies faced this cross-examination about some confusion about the number of bullets fired.
During the deposition, when you were asked that, you answered that at least 12 that are separate wounds that we know definitely came from separate bullets, right?
Yes, that's what's my answer.
Okay. Different than today?
Pardon?
Different than today.
I don't think the questions are the same.
Okay. And I understand that in this case, you're having a difficult time because of the number of gunshot wounds determining what's an entrance, what's an exit, if this is connected to that one or whatever, right?
You were shot multiple times.
I understand, ma'am. I understand.
Well, you know, I'm going to probably count sometimes the exit wounds as an entrance.
Okay.
You know, I may have given different numbers. I may have counted some exit for entrance, but I don't see the point of the question. Would you please tell me if that's a mistake you pick up from this report?
I don't know if it's a mistake or not, ma'am. I was just asking the question.
He was shot multiple times. He was shot twice in the head. There are fatal wounds. He was shot multiple times in the body, and several of those wounds are fatal.
Yes, ma'am. We understand.
That's
we just covered that. So, and just so I'm clear,
yeah,
your counting today was 17 separate shots, correct?
I counted 17.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe if you give me the time, I'll count another number.
Okay. And at the time of the deposition, under oath, ma'am,
yes, I went to the same thing and went through wounds, you know. I don't think that's the
Doc, just pause there. Wait for the next question, please.
Okay.
And, ma'am, at the deposition, your answer when asked was 12 times. Is that correct?
That was the answer you asked me, and I said 12 that were definitely. Let me see how I answered that.
Okay, so an associate medical examiner testified about the cause of death of one of the victims.
So the cause of Kelly's death was multiple gunshot wounds, and the manner is homicide.
Did you see any defensive wounds on Kelly, like where she, you know, had injuries to her fingernails, where she's fighting someone off or anything?
The only blunt force injuries that she had were the abrasions that we saw on her ear and neck.
And her toxicology, did she have some drugs in her system?
She did.
What'd she have in her system?
So Kelly has marijuana, marijuana metabolites. She has an alcohol level of 0.15.
Mm-hmm.
And she has amphetamine in her blood.
Could amphetamines be like something like ADHD medicine?
Amphetamine. There's no methamphetamine, so the amphetamine can be a prescribed drug. There's no way for me to tell whether the amphetamine that's in her blood is from a prescription or from an illicit source.
Amphetamines could be legally like Ritalin or Vyvanse or something like that.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
And she also has cocaine.
Did Kelly die from anything related to the drugs? drug overdose case?
Not in my opinion.
Prosecutors believe defendant Christopher Posada ditched his BMW about a mile away from the scene and then walked to the party. They theorize that he was accidentally shot during the attack, which is why they think he and his co-defendant, Marcus Stewart, stole a car and then took off back towards Posada's car to pick up Posada's car. Analysts found gloves in the stolen car with DNA from both defendants. They also found Posada's blood in the stolen car. And they have Posada's DNA on a hoodie recovered from a culvert near where the stolen car was found. The defense pushed back, though, at a DNA analyst's interpretation of the scene.
Now, 19B, the steering wheel of the Honda, you find that it is, the majority of it is Sean Henry's, right?
Yes.
Okay. And that Christopher Rosada, you conclude, is 10% of the mixture on that.
Right. So he most closely associated to contributor 2, which is about 10%.
Okay. Were you aware that there was a video of this vehicle and a video that showed that Mr. Rosada is in the back seat and is not driving the vehicle?
No, I haven't seen. I was unaware of the video.
Okay, and the detectives didn't share that with you?
It may have been in the case scenario, but I don't recall at this time.
Okay, and so if Mr. Rosada does not touch the steering wheel of that vehicle, how would his DNA get there?
I don't know how DNA would get on any of these profiles. I can't testify to that. I can just testify to the results, so I'm not sure how it got there.
Well, you've already testified about transfer evidence, right?
That could be one explanation, yes.
Okay. So if Mr. Rosada never touches that item and his DNA is on it, then one of the better scenarios for this is transfer.
Right. So that could be an explanation, yes.
Returning now is attorney Michael Bryant to talk about this case. So, Michael, what do you make of this surviving witness's testimony here? You have some opinions about that.
I know we keep calling him the surviving victim. I'm not sure what's really going on with this guy. I think he has so many motives to make the story work for him. He won't identify Rosada, didn't see him, didn't recognize him. He does identify with gold teeth and dreads another person there who was embroiled in their drug trade and suggested maybe he was there to, kind of get even for something that didn't go so well, a drug deal gone bad.
Yeah, you got a big mess here. You got drug deals going on at this party. That's coming out of the words of that particular witness. You got guns, you've got victims with drugs and alcohol in their system, multiple types of drugs. So what kind of party is this?
This was a Super Bowl party in name only. I haven't heard one shred of anything saying
exactly.
We had a TV to watch the game. No, they're just hanging
they
out.
Doing that.
They're smoking, they're drinking, they're doing whatever kind of drug they can find.
Okay, so this whole thing about evidence that the defense wants here, the argument was kind of muddy to understand in there. You know, did the defense want the swabs? Was there an issue with the list? Bottom line, the judge is like, okay, even if this is clerical, just cure it tomorrow. We'll get this taken care of.
Yeah, certainly not fatal. Certainly no violation, Brady violation. Nobody's getting in trouble. Let's just clean it up.
Exactly. And I think that was a logical way to keep this moving forward because it wasn't that big of a deal.
Right.
Michael Bryant, thanks a lot for being with us here on The Debrief.
Thanks, Aaron.
We will be back here on The Daily Debrief tomorrow at 5 Eastern with our live recap of cases nationwide. Good night.